On Thursday, Russia's President Vladimir Putin held his annual marathon press conference with the international press in Moscow. Today we bring you the first 2 hours of yesterday's press conference. On Monday, we'll bring you the remainder.
Thank you so much. Be seated. Good afternoon. I've got some notes, including the main socioeconomic development indicators. If I have a chance, probably I shall have it, which will be the case. Oh, I've got another copy here. And I have some other notes on me, and I'll try to use your questions to tell you something which I think is of importance and which is very close to what is going to happen in the very near future. But as we did last time, probably I would not start by a word of introduction, which would be it's sometimes long, and instead I'd proceed with taking your questions that are of interest and relevance for you. It is a press conference, after all, and we should make use of it so that you can perform your professional duty and ask those questions that you believe are of utmost importance and most relevance for the society. So let's start. Okay, as a rule, we first give the floor to ask the questions to the Kremlin pool. Journalists are veterans, but this time I'd like to turn the tide a bit and Govorit Moskva. Radio. It is a new generation of media, and they've been quite active of late. Thank you so much, Mr. Press Secretary. Great Moskva Radio, Daria Knorova. Mr. President, why are you standing for elections? What is your goal, your mission? What would you like to do for the Russian Federation? And what image do you have at the end of your tenure if you win the election? You know, on many occasions I said, what is the image of Russia I would like to see? And at mass events and in more closely knit events, I think it should be a forward-looking country, a modern country of a flexible political system and of a high-tech economy, and the labor productivity should be multiplied. I wouldn't like to cite my election agenda as any other candidate. I will have it, I almost have it now, but probably it's not the right format of an event to put it forward. But the main thing, the main tenet of it, which I believe we all should focus, I mean the public authorities and the society, upon, refers to the development of infrastructures, in particular infrastructures, education, healthcare, development, and as I said, the high-tech sector, greater, much greater labor productivity and efficiency, and without a doubt, we should aim at raising the incomes and living standards of our people. Well, it is quite in quite general terms, but I believe we will come back to that in the course of our today's conversation. Live news, please. Hello, Mr. President. While we waited for your announcement to stand for the presidency, well, several other candidates put forward their candidacies, but their approval rating is like close to the margin of error, or is of several percentage points. Why do you think over 20 almost years of your rule, we don't see the appearance of a normal, formidable, influential opposition candidate? Why there is no number two? Isn't it boring for you not having a strong contender. You know, to make your question more acute, I saw a young lady over there saying, Putin, bye-bye. Let us give the floor to her. Oh, it's not bye-bye, it's bye-bye. So will you pass the mic? You know, my eyesight fails me every now and then. Hello, this is the probably being lost in translation. Putin Babai means Grandfather Putin in Tatar language, which is the name that small children use to call you. My question relates to the language, if I may. Yes, okay, proceed. You know, the Tower Republic and many regions were perturbated by the language issue. We're concerned whether we will be in a more disadvantaged position. The Education Ministry decree was approved, and probably in 2 or 3 years' time, will you not put it on the table once again, and whether you want to merge regions, which is a concern of everybody. First, I don't think there is any acuteness with respect to the ethnic or language issue. Second, as regards the language, the issue is only about creating for all the children the level playing field for their future life, no matter in what region they live and reside. I love Tatarstan, and I've got many friends there, but you know what, Tatars live not only in Tatarstan, half of the Tatar ethnicity representatives reside in other regions, and everybody should have the level playing field. And if they know their national language, if they learn their national language and their ethnic language, which is of importance, as I think and I said, but if at the same time they lag behind in studying the overall communication language, which is the Russian language, and all the leading universities use the Russian language, I think it would not be appropriate with respect to the Tatar children, which is it. But what we should guarantee is that everybody can have a chance to study their own language, Tatar, Chechen, Mari language, any other, the Yakut language, to cite another one. We've got a huge plethora of them, which is our pride and our richness, our cultural and ethnic diversity, which we should definitely prop up, which boils down to it. The merge of regions. No, you know, we should acknowledge that after the known developments of the early 1990s and after the collapse of the USSR, you know, the constituent entities were formed due to an obsolete principle, and many of them were not quite solvent economically. If we speak in terms of economic feasibility, in this case, well, sometimes there is the point in it, but I want to emphasize, so that people in Tatarstan and other ethnic republics listen to me and hear me, will not impose anything. It is dangerous and wicked and pernicious for the unity of the Russian Federation, because any people, any ethnicity, any nation inside the Russian Federation, small or large, should be able to select a proper form of coexistence with all the other ethnicities. So the government, the public authorities, don't have any plans to merge any regions until I am president. So now, answering your question with regards to opposition and why it is not here, it hasn't appeared, no competitive opposition, you say. You know, the simplest thing for me would be to say that it's not my own duty to bring up my own competitors, but I keep thinking that our political environment as well as the economic environment should be competitive, and I would really very much like, and I'll do my best, so that our political system should be well balanced, which is impossible without the competition in politics. Why? Don't we have, you know, quite active opposition leaders? Why are they not competitors to the public authorities and the ruling entity. You know, our specificity that has been developed over the past decade in this country is as follows. Young people probably don't remember, don't know what happened in late 1990s or at the turn of the century, and they can't compare with what is happening now. And we've got lots of problems still, and we are here to talk about these problems. We will not hide or conceal anything, but at the same time, at the end of the day, our GDP has increased by 75% starting from the year 2000, and the industrial output by 60%. 75% up GDP growth, and 70% is the growth of industrial output. The processing industry grew at an advanced pace of 70% versus the 60% of the overall industrial output. The real salary now has declined a bit as a result of the crisis manifestations of the past 3 years, but starting from the early decade, the first decade of the century, it increased by 3.5 times. Real pension increased by 3.6 times, and the infant mortality got reduced by 2.6 times. The maternal mortality fell by 4 times. We lost 1 million citizens every year in the past, and we have now turned the tide. Still we have some issues and problems in this domain, but still we have been able to reverse the tendency, and now we faced two troughs, demographic troughs, and we'll take additional steps and measures. I'll mention them in the course of our meeting and conversation. We'll cope with them, I'm sure.
Our life expectancy used to be 65 in 3 years. Right now it's almost 73. We used to live in conditions of a civil war for quite some time. Several years, almost 6 years, or even more, almost a decade, when young fellows of 18, 19 years had to be sent against the bullets because we didn't have anything else. And right now, look at our armed forces. Our taxes have decreased threefold, whereas the country's reserves have increased by 30 times. And this has to mean something. When we're talking about the opposition, this has to be not just about some noisy politicians who talk about an anti-democratic regime. The opposition has to come up with something concrete, a proposal on how to make our life better. Of course, people are dissatisfied with many things, and indeed, it is justified because we could have done better. But when we compare and look at the leaders of the opposition, especially the non-systemic opposition, we have doubts as to any concrete alternatives. I think the most important question of the opposition is how to come up with not a noisy agenda, but a realistic agenda, something to gain the trust of the people. And I do hope that we are going to see such an opposition emerge.
We'll have an opposition figure sooner or later.
Andrei Kolesnikov, he's been covering the president of the Russian Federation for 18 years. Well, strictly speaking, 15 years. But still, quite a lot. Andrei Kolesnikov, Kommersant. My question is very simple. Mr. Putin, you are running as who? Let me explain. You can run on your own behalf, you can run on behalf of a movement or a political party. So, very briefly, whom do you belong to? And to continue this question, people say that there are some disagreements among your staff as to who will be your campaign manager. Could you please announce the person who run your campaign? And it doesn't even matter to you?
Well, I will run on my own behalf. And I definitely hope that I would be supported by some popular movements, parties, or any other groups that share my views and that endorse my views. So I really rely on broad support from our people. As for my campaign, you know, we talked about it yesterday. We don't have a final decision. As for disagreements, yeah, we do have disputes, so we do have disagreements, but we have not finalized anything. It's a technical issue, but it's important. It's an important one. I would want to be represented by people who enjoy the respect and who support the policies that the government has been conducting over the past years.
Let's go to the right wing over there. Мария Кравцова, Калининград. Mr. Putin, at your annual press conferences and Q&A sessions, a lot of people come to you with their problems, including personal problems. We all remember that the girl from Apatiti, she was only admitted to the hospital after you intervened directly. Why do you think so many people think that you are the only recourse, the only solution to their problems? Why do they think they have to appeal to the president directly, and how much time will be necessary for you to resolve all the problems of all the Russian people in this kind of a manual control mode? And my second very brief question related specifically to Kaliningrad. I'm sorry. Recently you were in Kaliningrad and they made a decision about building a new road there. There is another construction project there which is also highly important. The question of funds was resolved for the first road, but can the federal government also help us with this second construction project as well, building the road from Baltiisk to Kaliningrad? Thank you.
When I responded to the first question, I said that one of the government's priorities for the next years to come should be developing infrastructure, roads, airports, ports, telecom. So definitely, any construction, particularly in an enclave like Kaliningrad region is, will be of a priority to us. So we need to finalize what is being done. We need to have that belt road. We need to have some additional roads. Otherwise, Kaliningrad will not get the right road network that it deserves. So I can't tell you right now that the decision will be taken tomorrow. We also need to look at the resources that we have at our disposals and the requirements of other regions. So as I said, we do have a list of priorities: infrastructure, healthcare, education, high tech, and increasing the income of our people. But we need to find some sources for it. So it's no secret that over the past 12 months, we have weekly meetings with experts and with government officials trying to pinpoint those sources of income, those drivers. And many experts agree that, you know, we've been, you know, that some of the sources that they've been presenting will not yield any results. So when we get down to hands-on discussions, really practical discussions, even experts realize that there will be no yield or very little yield. So it's really hard to find those new drivers of new sources of income. So, but it's certain that we will definitely work on those projects. Now, the first question was on the so-called manual control. Well, that's a myth. I think it's over-exaggerated. If you take Russia's regions, if you take Moscow, the central authorities, and I've been head of government for 4 years, in 1999, and 4 years just recently. You cannot imagine the workload of the government. It's the toughest job in the executive power. You cannot really interfere in any issue. You know, we sometimes don't have a clear idea of what is happening in Russia's regions. That's bad. We need to have the big picture of what's happening everywhere. But that's why we hold these press conferences. That's why we have those direct lines. People often criticize them. People often say it's a formality, but that's not correct. That's not right. It's a channel of feedback. People get a chance to reach out to the government. And those tools of manual control are definitely needed to make it more systemic. So following every direct line, I meet with the governors of Russian regions and I present them with a list of problems that the people have voiced. So I don't feel that's bad. It's just an addition to the overall systemic work that we've been conducting. Thank you. And now the newspaper, Российская Газета, the official bulletin. Кирилл Латухина, Mr. Putin, so what is the source of economic growth that Mr. Ryashkin, the economy minister, and other ministers have been saying? Everyone's been saying that the Russian economy has been recovering, but what is the drivers of that growth? Is it just a formality? Is it a creative accounting or what? Or maybe we produce more tractors, more computers? So.
Right, I'm just looking around the room if there are any other questions related to this. Maybe we could add a few questions to your question. Sources of growth. Do we have other questions on the economy? Where? Fish processing? No, this is too specific. Fish processing, we'll talk about this later. Okay, so what is your question?
Maxim Rumyantsev, Free Press. Over the past decade, 48 enterprises, 48 projects have been blocked. You know, NGOs have been blocked, but behind them are new construction projects, and dozens of millions of rubles were lost, and so economic development is being blocked. Maxim Rumyantsev, and thank you for the road to Serebryanka. You know, we went there and we said that that's the road made by Putin and Rumyantsev, which is myself. So I represent freepress.ru.
All right, thank you. Well, your question was related to environment protection more than the economy. So I'll answer this question first, and then I'll try to answer your question as well. As regards economic growth, our economy is growing, and it is obvious. It's not like it's just some manipulation with the figures. Our GDP grew by 1.6%, output also grew by 1.6%. The automotive industry is growing quite well, the chemical industry, pharmaceuticals. agriculture, of course. This year, we'll have almost 3% by the end of the year. We had a bumper crop. Ткачев told me it is going to be 130.5 billion. This is the biggest crop we've ever had, the biggest harvest. I think the top figure for the Soviet period was 127. We've never had such a bumper crop in our history. Our exports are growing. We are now number one exporter for grain. That's tremendous. So we are growing. What are the sources of this growth? Well, first, we were able to overcome two shocks that you are all aware of that we faced in 2014-2015. Oil prices dropped dramatically, and this is a major source of revenues for our budget, as you know. And second, external restrictions or so-called sanctions. I'm fully confident that sanctions had no effect, did not have as much effect as oil prices, but they still affected us somewhat. We can talk about this more a little later. And we are now relying more on our internal demand, which is very important for any economy. What other indicators are there that show that we came out of a recession and we are now developing in a steady mode? A fixed investment grew by 4.2%. I said GDP grew by 1.6% and fixed investment grew by 4.2%. What does this mean? This means that people invest in development twice as much as what we have accomplished so far. This means that in the near and not so near future, in the midterm, we already are guaranteed a certain level of development because people have already invested a certain amount of money in that. Direct foreign investment has reached $23 billion. This is twice as much as we had last year, and this is an all-time high for the past 4 years. Inflation. We have a record low. We have record low inflation, and all-time low in the modern history of Russia, 2.5%. Budget deficit is 2.2%. I think it will be actually lower than that because the finance ministry wants to be conservative. They want to save some money for the rainy day, and perhaps they're right. But in any case, all these indicators show us that the economy is growing and that this growth is healthy. So the Ministry of Economic Development and Minister Areshkin, they're quite objective when they talk about this. As regards environment protection and those issues, we all know that this is always an issue. You have to strike the right balance between protecting the environment and developing. You always have to look for a proper balance. A decision has been made on this matter. In case a certain industrial or infrastructure project is being implemented, if this affects forests, for example, you have to implement compensatory planting. You have to plant at least as many trees as you cut down for your infrastructure project. We should take this approach when we talk about economic development.
Russia 24. Stas Natanzon, Russia 24. Next year,
The slogan that you need to stop terrorizing the business community is, will be marking a 10-year anniversary. But, you know, it still happens, and it applies both to these small businesses and major corporates. And amid sanctions, this is almost amounts to treason.
You tend to be extreme. You talk about the fifth column, traitors, treason. It sounds terrible, like you have to grab your things and run. Do we have any other questions on law enforcement? Okay, chess. That's interesting, but we'll come back to chess a little later. Prosecution service. Okay, what's your question about the prosecution service? I think there was a question about prosecution service. So what's the question about oversight, central bank? Well, okay, so what is your question?
My name is Natalia Nikitina, Federal Press, and I am a columnist on the economy. Right now, as you know, we are seeing the cleaning up of the banking sector. The central bank is looking very hard at private and state-run banks. But what about inspections by the law enforcement agencies in relation to the central bank? The central bank has an exclusive exceptional mandate. Maybe there have been some corruption cases or abuse on the part of the regulator.
You're right. According to law and international practice, our central bank is an independent organization. And the government has no control over it. So the central bank operates autonomously, and this makes sense economically. This enables them to regulate the financial sphere and the banking sector. We can talk about this matter in more detail a little later. I can tell you what I think about this situation. But as regards oversight, with respect to the central bank, there is such oversight. The prosecution service and other law enforcement agencies keep an eye on them, and from time to time I get reports about this. But so far there has been no confirmation, no evidence. So I would like to assure you, first, that there is oversight, and second, that no serious violations have been uncovered in the workings of the central bank. Next, to your question about inspections in general. First of all, as you know, we had a 3-year break for new businesses. So this measure proved quite effective. Next, our inspecting agencies, our watchdogs, are now adopting a risk-oriented approach. So they only inspect businesses, companies that may have some effect on people's life or health, situations like that. We've reduced the number. You know, you mentioned prosecution service. We've most of those inspections, they go through the prosecution service. So we've reduced the number of inspections, and we made a decision that the number of extraordinary inspections should not exceed 30% of the number of planned inspections. And then there is the state registry that shows how often those inspections are taking place, who does those inspections. So as we introduce all those principles, the situation with those inspections will become much healthier. On the whole, I would say that the situation is improving. Of course,
There may be questions about law enforcement, not watchdogs, not inspectors, but law enforcement. That's a different issue. And on this matter, I tend to agree with you. We haven't seen significant improvements in this regard. This has to do with corruption, of course, at various levels. And, you know, just the poor level of organization in this work. There is no proper oversight in this matter. It's a tough question. Let me be frank with you. And I can't say I'm happy with the way this work is being done. You know, about a year ago, I asked Bortnikov, director of the FSB, and I showed him some papers that I got through one of the channels regarding a certain organization, and he took a look at those papers, and he told me, Mr. Putin, 6 months ago, we conducted an investigation, a probe against this organization. We sent all these materials to court, and all the people mentioned in those papers were sent to prison, and they hired new people 6 months ago, and then we have the same situation all over again. No, frankly speaking, sometimes I don't even know what to do about this. But just one thing that comes to mind, this is just one of the solutions that are available. At this point, we are not ready to do that for a number of reasons, financial, you know, housing situation, and so on. But one solution I can think of is something similar to what we have in the army. We have a continuous rotation in the army. We have been doing this for decades. This is one of the principles of military service. You spend 3 to 5 years in one place, and then you have to be relocated to another station. Maybe we should do something similar in law enforcement. I repeat, this is due to we have issues regarding housing and monetary things, expenses, but having this kind of rotation may be worth looking at. Maybe it could prove effective in law enforcement as well.
Channel 1. Well, Channel 1, you seem to like these people. Anton Vernitsky, Channel 1, now that you've announced that you will run for president, 5.5 years ago you issued the so-called May decrees. They covered the entire life of Russia, defense, healthcare, education, journalists talked a lot about it, and governors always felt frustrated and depressed when you've criticized them, specifically about when you talked about relocation of people from ramshackle housing. But what kind of performance do you think? How can you evaluate the performance on those May decrees?
The May decrees, when they were issued, everybody started complaining, saying that it was impossible to implement them, that it was too much, that the financial burden was too heavy, and this would slow down our economy, that we shouldn't plan to increase wages so much, that this would be unacceptable, especially in the public sector, because once you raise wages, inevitably wages would go up in the private sector as well, and productivity doesn't grow as quickly in the economy as wages. And to some extent, this is
true. But still, I thought it was necessary to do that. By the way, answering the previous question, I said the economy relies on internal demand more today. And even when real incomes went down a little, still, this year we saw increased demand. Internal demand, internal trade grew by 3%. And I think real incomes will also improve. Without these benchmarks we set in 2012, you know, to increase wages in the public sector for teachers, doctors, professors, kindergarten tutors, the situation would be worse. So I think me and my colleagues made the right decision when we set those goals, those benchmarks. So what is happening on the whole, 93% to 94% of the goals we set back then have been achieved. This includes wages in the public sector. So I think in 2018, like we planned, we will reach the final goal and all those benchmarks will be attained. You mentioned ramshackle housing, dilapidated buildings. Well, it was dangerous housing. That's something different. So for dangerous housing, we've accomplished this goal. I'm talking specifically about dangerous housing, but our dilapidated housing is sometimes quite close to dangerous. So we've reached our goals for dangerous housing. We're working on dilapidated housing now. Okay, we also had this goal to take care of kindergartens so that everybody can get their kids into a kindergarten. Will this goal has been achieved by 98.8%. We had about 500,000 children who needed a place at a kindergarten. Currently, this goal has been achieved 100% in most areas, most places in Russia. There are a few regions, a few provinces where this goal has not yet been attained. The number of children still waiting to get a place at a kindergarten is 63,000. We had 500,000. Now it's 63,000, and very soon we'll be able to resolve this issue completely. So on the whole, I can tell you that the May decrees have been implemented satisfactorily.
Let's move on. Pskov.
Pskov, Pskov is close to the Arctic, so we'll cover the Arctic as well soon.
Alina Chibana, in the past 18 months, the cadastre, the official cost of land, has gone down. The value of land has gone down. It means that people would have to pay high taxes. And it's just, you know, those people who live in the countryside, they have to pay higher tax. Oh, those who live in the Pskov region saw a tenfold increase in the tax. There have been some recommendations to decrease it, but the issue is still there. Can we resolve it somehow, once and for all?
Well, that's a practical question. By the way, what was this question on the Arctic? What about the Arctic? What are the problems in the Arctic?
Daria Shuchalina, Komi, Republic of Komi. My question on the Arctic is as follows. So what are the priorities for Russia's regions in terms of their projects and the Northern Territories? So that the Arctic can be explored in the best way. What specific projects are really promising? What projects should Russian regions support?
All right, let's start with this. We have a whole program for developing the Arctic. It's just important that industrial development in the Arctic
including mining. Like Lomonosov said, you know, he said Siberia will make Russia rich. Now, the Arctic is making Russia rich. That's where most of our mineral resources are. But developing all those resources should take place in sync with taking care of the environment and making sure we comply with all the requirements for industrial activities in this extremely fragile ecosystem. There are also security issues. There's environmental security, there is military security. When I was at France, IOSIF, and, you know, they give us tours and they would say these islands recently belong to Russia. I think they have forgotten that those are Russian islands. Well, we reminded them about that. So now they are well aware of this fact. And another important consideration, we should always remember about the interests of local people, ethnic minorities living there. We should not impinge on their economic activities. And of course, if there are certain issues when we implement major national projects, certainly you have to have certain compensations for those people. You have to offer something else in return for them. This is a complex issue, and we'll deal with it in a complex, comprehensive way. Now, coming back to your first question, I think it is extremely important, not just for Pskov, but other places in Russia as well, basically to all the places. First of all, this is the way it works throughout the world. Owners and property have to take care of, they have to pay property taxes, well, that's a given. And then the official cost of property is market-based, and this is proper and right. What's not right is that the tariffs for those property payments, they should be realistic. They should be based on real incomes. You cannot separate these two things. You have to take into account how much people make. You can't do what they did in the 90s, shock therapy. This is just unacceptable. So let's not start an argument about people who made those decisions back then. At the beginning, people paid attention to this a lot, but the people who initiated this process, they promised to keep it in a balanced way. Things that you talk about indicate clearly that those decisions were totally unbalanced. We have certain categories of people who enjoy certain benefits, like 10,000 ruble deduction. But property, you mentioned 600 square meters, in many parts of Russia, their cost, this amount exceeds 10,000, even in Pskov, let alone Moscow, St. Petersburg, some other parts of Russia close to densely populated cities with over 1 million population. So I'm grateful to you for asking this question. Very soon I will instruct the government to look into this matter with the State Duma, and I want them to make a decision. All the people who had certain benefits and they had this 10,000 ruble deduction, from now on they will have a natural benefit in kind, and they will not have to pay for their 600 square meters. These are people who had this 10,000 ruble deduction. But this is not enough. I think we should expand this category, and we should include all retired people, because these people, they are entitled to benefits related to their apartments and houses. So if we add retired people to this list, this will only be just, and This will not affect the government budget.
Please don't criticize me, but we have Mr. Brilov from Russia TV.
Sergey Brilov, Russia One.
It's clear that the vast majority of question is on domestic policy, but I would like to ask a question on international affairs. Now, before the recent escalation cycle and tension, you know, we still had some of the events like the U.S. pulled out of the missile defense agreement, then now the INF agreement has been under fire. Now, looking ahead, what about the New START treaty? Will it survive? Well, if something happens to it, could it lead to a new arms race? And we'll have to, in this case, increase the defense budget, and healthcare and education will have to suffer.
Well, we did not withdraw from the fundamental treaties that are the cornerstone of the international security architecture. We did not withdraw from the ABM treaty. It was the United States who did that. Now we are hearing things about intermediate range missiles. I think this is a propaganda campaign in preparation for the U.S. To withdraw from this treaty. Actually, they have factually withdrawn from this treaty already. They are accusing us, but what did they do? They deployed missile defense systems in Romania, and the way they did it is they deployed Aegis launchers there. They moved them from sea to land. And those systems can be easily converted or replaced. Those interceptor missiles could be replaced with intermediate range missiles. So this process is already underway, and if things continue to go this way, nothing good will come out of it. But we don't plan to withdraw from any treaty ourselves. As regards the New START treaty, yes, we heard the United States talking that they no longer need this treaty. And yes, they do talk about this. So if the United States does this again, if they withdraw from this treaty unilaterally, this would have a very negative effect on international security. Now, as regards our defense spending, we are aware of what's happening in the world. We know what the outcomes of those actions can be. We will maintain our security without starting a new arms race.
There was a second part to this question.
My question was if increased defense spending may affect social spending.
As for military spending, it's balanced by a number of limits. First of all, we have to ensure our security, and we should not undermine our economy. These are the two factors that shape our military defense budget. So for next year, $1.4 trillion, that's for procurement, and 1.4 for maintenance, so 2.8 trillion rubles. So that's 2.8% of GDP, roughly. So I've given you 2.8 figure, but that's roughly 46 billion U.S. dollars in U.S. dollar terms, 46 billion. Take the U.S. They signed the bill already, and that's 700 billion. That's their military budget, that's their military spending. Just compare 46 and 700. Can we afford to have 700 billion? No. Well, 46 is might be big for us. And you might have heard a joke that those who don't want to feed their own army will feed someone else's army. But that's an old joke. There are new jokes. Now, here's a new one. Well, it might be known to some of you. Former officers, and the son comes to the former officer, and he asks his son, "So I used to have this knife, this navy knife. Have you seen this navy knife? Well, you know, I just swapped it for a watch with a friend of mine. Well, I'll take a look, give it to me. Well, that's a good watch. But tomorrow, you know, the gangsters would come here, they would kill me, they would kill your mother, they would rape your sister, and you would come out and say, you know, Moscow time is 12:30. Well, we don't want a development like this. So we'll definitely focus on developing our navy and army. We won't get ourselves dragged into an arms race, and we won't disrupt our budget.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.